Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, and with me, as always, the host of the show. You know him, you love him. You can't live without him. It's The Hollywood Reporter's very own, Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Jason, how are you?
That was a Lettermanism. I find myself talking in Lettermanisms all the time.
I like that. That's good. He's somebody we should emulate.
Well, he's lasted in TV, which is, and we've lasted 14 episodes now.
We've totally lasted in
so
TV.
We're right,
talking about TV. We're totally lasting.
Yeah, we're right there behind David Letterman. But you know who's no longer making late night shows?
Oh, do tell.
Well, Stephen Colbert.
Right.
But although I suspect he'll be back because he's going to take over for David Letterman next year.
I did hear about that. That is a thing.
And Craig Ferguson, who I think is not going to be making any more late night shows after today as we record this. I think he's
today
probably
as we record
done.
It. Yeah. I think he's done.
It's a big week. This is for those whose contracts expire at the end of the calendar year, the last shows are right now. And that means Stephen Colbert, who's going to CBS, is going to he just wrapped things up last night.
Yes, fantastic.
And then Craig Ferguson's wrapping it up too. So what do you think? How do you think about Colbert going out and what we might see next year from him?
Well, I think it's a really interesting bit of change, right? I mean, because I think that the farewell piece. I did a thing basically saying, look, the guy doesn't need a farewell. He's not leaving. He's coming back. He'll be taking over for Letterman.
Well, the character is going though.
The character is going, and so I did a little appreciation of that prior to the Thursday nights when his final episode.
Right.
And you know, I think it was great because I remember, you know, I was a TV critic in 2005. So I do remember thinking like, I don't know, man. I liked it, but I was definitely thinking, I don't know if this is going to work because could that character he was playing with his own name, but basically spoofing Bill O'Reilly, could that work for a long term? And in the appreciation I did, you know, I narrowed it down. Like, yeah, he did a pretty great job doing that for a long time. I think he shocked a lot of people, me included. I mean, I've always loved him, but I thought that he was able to. I could see the legs on that, and he was really being super creative. And then his breakthrough was, you know, he's admitted this already, his breakthrough was, you know, you come up with an idea, and then you create your own, you know, boundaries, your own restrictions. You know, like, I can do this, but I can't do that. You know, he always had to be reminded not to break character when he was between commercials and stuff, when he would talk to the audience out of character and then come back and be in character. So, but you're always thinking in your mind, you know, can I do this or can I? Everybody does that. If you're any kind of artist or if you're drawing up plans, like, should we be allowed to do this or not? And so I think he struggled with, like, what can that Colbert character do? And then he basically, the thing that freed him was such a simple idea, and that's what I wrote about in my piece, was that he just said, look, if I'm actually creating this persona of a guy who's so egotistical and you know, it's like a Bill O'Reilly times a thousand, but he just believes that, you know, he has a nation of followers who follow his every word. And really, if you go back, the send up, of course, was that he was sending up the Fox News audience, taking in everything that's been told to them, whether it was truth or not. And then he's savvy enough to know also, as I said in my piece, that the same thing applies to the far left. You know, we just, you know, if you're on the far left, I like to think of myself more in the middle, but if you're on the far left where I used to reside, I think that you just want to hear your opinions, you know, parroted back to you, which was really the spoof of Fox News on the right. And so what he was doing is he took that persona and he said, okay, look, if there is such a person, and there is, and if everybody's just going to sit back and let it wash over them as they sit on the couch and not make judgments, and everything I do is fact and everything I say is great, then the idea is anything that this guy, anything this character, this persona can be interested in will be interesting to the audience. I don't even have to question it. And that's amazing. I mean, if you look back at when that happened, that's when the show just got a lot more crazy. You know, it was just there was all kinds of politics and stuff like that, but it just got a lot crazier when he was able to sort, you know, now you got pop music and you've got you have all kinds of stuff in it. You have nerdism stuff. He loves Star Wars and George Lucas.
Right.
And anything.
He's a big The Hobbit. He did a whole interview last week with the dragon from The Hobbit.
Right. Exactly. Right.
And he is a gigantic, it turns out he is a gigantic nerd under there. And you're right. You know, 9 years is a long time to just have be a fictional character. But I think implied there is that, you know, a fictional character is going to be one note. And you can't do it for 9 years as one note. And he didn't.
Right, exactly. And I think that when he was able to branch out, I think he felt more free.
Yeah.
As I said in my piece, you know, that's when he was becoming more popular anyway as a show and as a host, and he was able to run for politics, and he was able to, you know, they made a ice cream name after him, and you know, he was philanthropic, you know, things were important to him, mm-hmm. pop culture and music, and it just so much there were no boundaries, and then that's what made the rapport. That's when it went beyond just like a political fun stand-up show to like this broad pop culture skewering and appreciating series.
And I would assume, I mean, I know, I think we've talked about this before, maybe not on this podcast, about on the TV podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes, back in April. Mm-hmm. On my little TV podcast that I have at The Incomparable, we talked about Stephen Colbert a little bit, and you were, you know, so bullish on him as the replacement for David Letterman, just that it is the perfect choice. And I know you interviewed him, and you've talked about how fast and how sharp he is, but you know, just to go over that a little bit again. I mean, he is going to get, as great as this character was, he's getting free of that character, which means he's got like every color to paint with now instead of just the ones that were in the Stephen Colbert character's palette.
Yeah, I think the only thing that holds him back is being behind a desk now, and talking to somebody. But he does that anyway, and his personality is so funny. You know, I also don't think it will take long for fans of his to sit down and watch Late Show and realize, okay, that's Colbert, that's not The Rapport. Right. You know, that'll be pretty easy to witness. But yeah, I think that he's going to be super, super pumped to like be a free of the shackles and I think we will see different things. And he's lightning quick. He thinks on his, I wrote that, he thinks on his feet faster than like almost anybody I've seen. He and Jon Stewart are really, really quick, but like Colbert may not be. You know, he might be the top speed guy.
I read a piece from somebody who said that there are people in improv who think he's the best improv guy ever.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, because he's not just one step ahead of you. He's two or three steps ahead of you, because he's thinking like, okay, when I drop this thing on you, and I'm gonna either make you laugh when I do it, or I'm gonna make you shift gears, I've already got the response to your response in three different shades waiting for you. You haven't even hit it yet.
He's playing chess, and we're all playing checkers. Basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's definitely the chess master. And he's just, you know, like I said, I did put a link in there that in the piece that I did for The Hollywood Reporter in 2006 when I interviewed him live on stage in San Francisco. He's just a fascinating, really interesting person. And his mind is curious, and that's what moves him. And you know, you think about it, the guy is really interested in religion, he's interested in history, he is the ultimate pop culture nerd, mm-hmm. and he's very well read. All the stuff that's in politics, of course, interests him, but he's literature, all kinds of things kind of spark that brain of his, and that's what you want in a late night host. The only thing I worry about a little bit is that sort of the eclectic element of his guests that were on the Colbert Report. I wonder what room there is for them on a show where you have to be really pay attention to the ratings, and you have to book A-list guests and celebrities and people pitching movies. So where does where do the obscure politicians, where does the obscure novelist or whoever,
right.
Where do they pop in? That's the kind of thing that, you know, I love the fact that like on the last night, on that sing-along song, you saw like what?
Doris Kearns Goodwin was prominently featured at one point.
You know, there's Jeff Tweedy, there's Michael Stipe, there was Ken Burns. I mean,
Ken Burns, you've shared some bottled water with Ken Burns.
I did, yes.
Sorry, that anecdote was a bit quotidian, but you
it
know.
Was quotidian, yes, but yes.
Yeah, I Letterman used to be able to do that. I mean, obviously 12:30, but even at 11:35, and Carson used to be able to do that. But the way the shows are formatted these days, where they front load so much comedy, in part to counter Jon Stewart and Stephen yeah. Colbert, right? Mm-hmm. They front load with so much comedy, and then you've got a couple of segments with the main guest, and literally there's, you know, there's nothing left. There's like a segment left. So, you know, back in the day, there was always your, you know, second or third guest where you could slide in somebody eclectic. And now, you know, that's going to be, they're going to have to format it like that if they want to have anybody on who's not like an A-list celebrity. And you know, I think Colbert does fine with big celebrities, but you're right, you know, you want to see him be able to feed some of his kind of eclectic tastes by having those weird, the weird guests are good, right? That adds some spice to the show,
right? And well, I wouldn't be surprised if he sort of put the process on its head, where, you know, there will be no doubt there'll be a ton of, you know, scripted and pre-shot pre-taped bits. I mean, that's what rules late night, because eventually, once these shows, I mean, there's so many of them, and there's so many good stuff in them that you can't watch every night, and it just be too draining. So what you do is you just find it online, right? I mean, somebody will send you a link to like to Kimmel,
Jimmy Fallon,
or I mean the whole like. I mean, the whole Kimmel getting punked for Christmas with his neighbor, the whole thing's been going on for 4 years. It's still good. And, you know, Kimmel's amazing at doing pre-tape bits. Fallon is too. Uh-huh. Fallon's musical guests are amazing. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a way to fit in some more eclectic stuff is to put it in the – because those guys are not doing the eclectic stuff, and they're doing the really broad humor. Put some of the eclectic stuff and then do the Colbert style humor in some one or two tape bits, smaller tape bits. And then you can, then you bust out, you know, Tom Cruise or, you know, whoever it is that's going to be your Angelina Jolie, whoever's going to be your big star that night. So I'm not worried about him. I think he'll do great.
Yeah, I think it's the case where people who don't know might say, if this is a guy who has relied on a character and now he doesn't get to do that character anymore, that maybe he's going to be in trouble. But I think everybody seems to feel the same, which is he was being held back by the character. The character was great, but it precluded him from doing some material because it didn't make sense with the character. And now he just – I don't think the Stephen Colbert – that debuts on CBS is going to be like unrecognizable from the Stephen Colbert on the Colbert Report, but he's going to have those extra, that extra range that he's going to be able to open up a little bit more because he's no longer inside this kind of meta show within a show concept of this character. So I think it'll be, you know, I think giving him free reign, it's going to be great.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, again, he's somebody not worried at all about. I think the big mystery, not big mystery, but going forward, I want to see what Larry Wilmore does when he takes over for Colbert.
Yeah.
And that's because that's coming soon. That's like January 19th, I believe. And then you got James Corden taking over for
Craig Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. Who has also left us as of this evening.
So what do you think about Craig Ferguson's time? I've heard people who say that they've tried to watch it and they can't get through like 5 minutes of it. And I've heard other people say they just absolutely love it. And it seems to be one of those like true 12:30 kind of shows. When I discovered Letterman in the 80s, it was the same kind of, it was absurd and it was slow, and you know, it was funnier if you watched it every night than if you just dropped in every few weeks. And I get the sense that Ferguson was kind of like that. Like once you got into it and you got him, and if he worked for you, it was just a fantastic show. But for a lot of people, if not most people, they're like, I don't understand this. You know, forget about it.
Yeah, I think that, I really like the guy.
He's a likable guy. Every time I tuned in, I thought he was really entertaining, and I thought the show was kind of bizarrely entertaining.
Right, and you know, the charm of that show was that there really is nothing like that anymore. It is bizarrely entertaining. It does seem like more off the cuff. Doesn't
kind of ramshackle and unplanned, and like the early days of Letterman were, where it was almost like it's that moment of, can you believe that they gave us a show, right? Can you believe that this is actually airing? And that to have that happen today is great. But at the same time, you look at that if you're CBS and you're like, well, it's airing because we're obligated to air whatever David Letterman wants to air at 12:30. Right. And now they're not obligated to do that anymore. So James Corden is going to go in there.
Well, that's also kind of like a strange, eclectic choice as well. I mean, I think I love that guy. I think he's amazing. He's got a lot of different talent, and maybe he will be the like completely out of left field pick, which it could be. But I always thought that the Craig Ferguson pick was hindered by the fact that way back when they actually had like a tryouts, and they had different people on different nights, and it went on forever. And then there would be people that would get it, and you think, oh, yeah, this guy would be a great host. He's like my favorite. And then, you know, and then they picked Ferguson, and I was like, really? That's really, I mean, A, he was, you know, he was Scottish. It was so random to have that happen. So and I guess in some ways, if you look back at that, though, I mean, it was a combination of CBS and Letterman. It wasn't just Letterman. And so I guess we can see the CBS DNA in the eclectic choice as they go to, you know, this new pick, James Corden. I think for what never really worked for me about Ferguson was there was, it was kind of all over the place, but it just never struck, it struck me as curious and interesting, but never hysterically funny. And because he's not that well known, and because in the early days, that slot doesn't get a lot of great guests. I just didn't find anything original. Not original. It was different, but it didn't like stand out. Like, oh man, this is like, there's some shows you watch and you think, oh God, like, you know, when you see Key and Peele, you're like, okay, this is brilliant. Everybody's got to watch this.
Right.
And, stuff like that. I mean, for example, a little bit off topic, but I'd never reviewed the Comedy Central series Review when it first came out. And, you know, because they have so many shows, right? And then you want to review it, and then you don't. And then I just was like, what is it? You know, I kind of half-assedly thought, what are they doing? Is it just a guy on the street, or, you know, wasn't paying attention to it? And so I was late to that show. But when I started watching it, I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. This is such an amazing series that is completely unexpected, and you just want to make the Clarion call and get everybody to watch it. I just never felt that with Ferguson. I thought it was like an interesting kind of weird pick, and he's charming, but he wasn't particularly funny, and I didn't get like the pacing of it, and then I just lost interest. So and then that's just how it was, and you could tell that like he was never gonna get the big guests, or he was never gonna be like huge. It had to be something really moving that made some of his shows like pop up in the zeitgeist. That doesn't mean his show was bad or that it wasn't important, but he was clearly the last player in a very crowded field.
Right. Well, onward. And
well, let's just say the final thing that,
oh, yeah,
about that show, which I hate to see it go out like this, because he is such a great guy, but I really am disappointed that he booked Jay Leno.
Jay Leno.
Yeah, that is the big FU to Letterman and CBS. And I just, you know, we're not there to see what's going on behind the scenes. And surely it has something to do with CBS. I'm not sure how much control. I don't think there was any control of Letterman, because he doesn't own that space anymore. That was part of his deal. He's not going to be executive producing that slot. So,
right.
I just don't know how you can read that as not a slap in the face to Letterman. I don't know how you could see it any other way. The last guest is Jay Leno. That's stunning to me.
Yeah.
There is zero love lost between Leno and Letterman, even after all these years. And you know, only even in the later years when, not that Dave ever gave a damn what anybody thought, but like, in the last 4 or 5 years, he really does not care about anything. And so he's clearly gone after Leno.
Oh, yeah.
And basically just, there is no love lost. That's the best way to put it. So for Ferguson to put Leno as his last guest, I just don't get it. I just think that's a really dickish way to go out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in context, and we're saying this before it's aired, but in context, yeah, it does seem maybe the conversation is different and it's, hey, you're a guy who doesn't have a talk show anymore. Right. what do I do now? And maybe they'll make it like that. But it is hard not to read the subtext, which is on this show produced by David Letterman's company. The capping moment is hey, it's Jay Leno.
Oh God, yes, I know. I was up last night and I was tweeting. I said, "Don't go out like that. That is just not the way to go out. That is such a bad way. I mean, he's just such a burning the bridge. Not that he'll get back, but he is. You know, he's doing some daytime. What does he do? What does Ferguson do now? He's got some syndicated show that he hosts. I don't know. One of those things where it's like, I don't know. Whatever. It's one of those old shows that's been revamped and brought back on a syndicated basis. He's doing that. But whatever. I'm him leaving the space. Other than the fact that I have met him and he has been kind to critics and seems like a really good guy. And he tried very hard. I still think it's a cruel business and he's not really going to be missed that much.
Definitely was an outlier.
He was an outlier. That's a good way to put it. I think you get Corden coming, you got Larry Wilmore. And you got everybody else who's already. I mean, Corden is the big mystery. But and then what? Larry Wilmore. Finally, you actually have a person of color in late night. Mm-hmm. Let's see what he does with that. So that'll be fun.
They changed up the name, which I think is interesting. It was going to be the Minority Report, which is a funny joke, but right. It's going to be the Nightly Show following the Daily Show. And I wonder about that. I wonder if they were afraid it was going to send a message like that it was only going to talk about race or something like that. And although it was a funny joke, maybe it doesn't have legs. But I think it's interesting that they changed the name.
Well, I did see that. And in some ways, I mean, yeah, there could be that. But I wonder if it's just like a thing like, hey, let's not box ourselves in anymore. Because, you know, it's like the Colbert Report boxed him in to be that character. You know, and Larry Wilmore was the senior black correspondent.
Right. Well, and it's not a franchise, right? I mean, The Daily Show survived its initial host because it didn't say, you know, it wasn't the Craig Kilborn show, it was The Daily Show. And the Colbert Report was always going to be Stephen Colbert. So by calling it The Nightly Show, it's like Late Night or The Tonight Show. They can bring on somebody else in 10 years and keep it the same.
Yeah, and I think that's smart. And I actually think that there is you know, chemistry there between the names and the transition. And Wilmore is familiar to people not only from Daily Show, but from all kinds of stuff on Comedy Central. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I think the audience will take to him. And he's also another really cerebral guy.
So smart.
He's very, very funny. And it gives him a chance to really shine in a star role rather than just sitting in. Really smart guy. And hopefully, you know, he'll be able to put his own spin on it, his own identity. And again, it's like the great thing about being on Comedy Central is it's so low pressure, right? You don't have to get, you know, millions and millions. I mean, you can when you become famous, but at the beginning, they're not expecting much from him. Just be funny and give us quality. They don't really care about the ratings right off the bat.
Right. I want to do some follow-up.
Let's do.
Some listener. But before we get to the listener questions, I have follow-up for you, too.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Okay. This could really go anywhere.
No, so I have been watching Ascension.
Oh, yes.
Which aired this week.
Uh-huh.
I'm only about three quarters of the way through it. I'm not all the way through it yet.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But my wife would like to, I think, not thank you, but curse your name, that every time there is skin on this show, I just shout, Ascension.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I do it a lot because there are a lot of butts on that show. You are not wrong. You are not wrong.
It was their way to sell that thing, man. It was, and not that there's anything wrong with that.
No,
you know,
no. And there are many different butts. It's not just like one. It's not just like in Battlestar Galactica. There was like they kept on using Trisha Helfer's, you know, model body and showing parts of her body. And this, there are many, many bodies.
They're all over the map.
They are. That is a spaceship full of butts. And we have seen them all. And I appreciate that in your review in The Hollywood Reporter, you did actually use the line Ascension. As promised here last week.
Yeah. I put it down there and I tweeted it out right away. I was so giddy about it. I thought, well, I can't let sit on this. Let's get it out there.
And then it needs to be in the world.
And then it needs to be in the zeitgeist. Ascension. And yeah, so that's, and then you know what? Trisha Helfer still getting it done and breaking the internet.
Yep.
I mean, that is.
Yeah.
Wow.
And okay. She's building her own army of Tricia Helfers to yes. take over the spaceship. I think that it's a very nice concept. And, you know, that I'm fascinated by the fact that this is a Sci-Fi Channel show, mm-hmm. And they made some very specific creative decisions. They wanted this to be pushing it in terms of the content. So it's a TVMA. Mm-hmm. It's got some swearing. It's got some adult. It's got some pretty, like, up against the line of what you can show on TV, adult situations,
mm-hmm.
And lots of butts.
Yep.
And, yeah, I mean, I just think that's funny because we're so used to seeing the kind of soft, family-friendly-ish dramas from Sci-Fi a lot of times where they're, like, they could go gritty, but they don't go gritty because the Canadians are just so darn polite. And this show is not like that. This show has got that. They really pushed it, and I kind of enjoyed it. It's a little bit of a moment of like, oh, we're trying this now. Are we Sci-Fi? But I find it very entertaining. I think Gil Bellows, especially, I found really amusing as without giving too much away for people who haven't seen it, because there are some major crazy things that happen.
Twists.
I mean, there's crazy thing that happens at the end of the first night, and you're like, well, that was crazy. And then the second night, there's stuff that's like, whoa, this is even crazier than. How many different elements are they going to throw into the show? It's very interesting. But the Gil Bellows character, who is kind of a footnote in episode one for very clear reasons, ends up being this just increasingly weird character where you take this kind of likable Ally McBeal, likable guy, and then you put him in these strange situations. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I haven't gotten to the end yet. And I really like this idea of introducing a concept with, you know, it's like 6 hours basically over three nights. And they just dropped it down and said, here it is. I'm actually finding it way less intimidating to go through 6 hours, just like that's the show we watched this week.
Right.
And there's nothing else on because all the other shows are in reruns. So we just watched Ascension all week. And, you know, and if it comes back, it comes back. And if not, then not. But I feel like it's almost like a risk-free trial as a viewer. It's like it's super easy. I'm not committed to watching 20 hours of this thing. And I've kind of enjoyed it. So I don't know if it's going to come back.
I was wondering what your feedback on that was going to be because you are the go-to nerd.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Two of us, I am definitely the go-to nerd. No, I really enjoy. I mean, it is flawed, as you say in your review. It's not a perfect show by any means, but I think there are lots of really interesting things in it. I'm kind of fascinated by it, and every time they and people who've seen the show will understand this more than people who haven't, but every time they cut to a shot of what's happening back on Earth, and there's like a building and a tree and a sky, I just laugh because the contrast between that and the spaceship is so hilarious. It's like, oh, it's a bird flying through the sky. They don't have that on the spaceship, and it's weird. It's such a strange show. But
yeah,
do you know about the ratings for that? Has it been good or bad for them?
I actually don't know on that. I think it's been so much towards the end of the year with lists and
nobody's paying attention.
So much going on, right? The Sony hacks and all that stuff. So it's been kind of crazy, but I actually, you know, like I said, I wanted it to come back. So you're on board for it coming to be a permanent series?
Yeah, I mean, with the caveat that I've got like an hour and a half left to go in the 6 hours, but I think it's I look at it and I think you could take this show in almost any direction and it could go off in really unexpected areas and provide a lot of interesting drama and social commentary and, you know, character study. And I think it's a really interesting concept, the way that it plays out over the course of the plot. So I think that's always good. That's like good raw material. You know, the Battlestar Galactica miniseries wasn't that good. We think back to how great the Battlestar Galactica series got, but the opening miniseries was kind of, it was okay, but it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. It was not truly great until that beginning of that first full season when they had a couple fantastic episodes right out of the gate. This feels a little bit like that. I'm not saying it could become Battlestar Galactica or anything, but I feel like there's a lot of good raw material here, and if they did it right, it could be a really great continuing series.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I want it to go forward and give it a chance to work out its little glitches and
let Tricia Helfer and Gil Bellows have some work.
Yes, more ass.
Bring it. That's right. Sci-Fi Channel needs more ass. So Ascension, bring it on. So that's my follow-up for you. I watched I watched it based on your ringing endorsement of the butts that were in it. And yeah, was not disappointed by the show or the butts.
Well, tell the missus that I'm sorry that I ascension popped into my brain and now it's all over the place.
She's not speaking to you anymore. got a couple more letters from listeners.
Okay.
Hey, Tim. / Sir Timothy von Gutmann.
Whoa. / another blast from
Jason,
the past.
Yes, this is from George D., our friend George D.
In the 415.
In the 415, even when he's not in the 415.
Yeah.
Like when he was at Georgetown. It doesn't matter. He's in the 415 always.
Right. When he was in college, still in the old podcast, which we always say again as the caveat, don't look it up.
No, but he was one of our this is going to be a running theme. These are our old pals from the old podcast coming back to us here at the holidays, like you do.
Yeah.
Go back home for the holidays.
Yeah. They come back and they sample. And he's on board. Yep. We love George. Mm-hmm.
So here's what George D. wrote. Listening to last week, and Jason sparked a question in my mind. While I could likely get a faster answer on Google, I hope you guys can help me avoid spoilers. And hey, it's been a while since you've read one of my questions. Thanks to the brilliant decision to not post S.H.I.E.L.D. on Netflix until it was way too late to catch up to real time, is Agent Carter going to spoil Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I bailed last season well before it got good, and now I'm back on board. My guess is that it won't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen, have they given you screeners for Agent Carter?
Agent Carter has only been
they did that little short on like
it.
A DVD, and that's all we've really got.
Mm-hmm. There is no episode, and I'm not sure we're going to get one before it happens.
Interesting.
Not a good sign.
My guess is that it's not going to spoil it, but I think this is an interesting question also about like streaming, like. If you do a mid-season finale, do you get that stuff up on streaming, or do you make people wait for a whole, you know, for the whole season to air before it goes on streaming? I don't know. Hulu or something. Well,
yeah.
Hulu is streaming, but Hulu you gotta, you know, is different from Netflix. That's
it is. Yeah, because you can't get all of them. I think that the cat's out of the bag already, technology wise. So we've talked a little bit about this. I'm not a great. I think you lose a lot of the, as we said, the ability to promote your own show by just dropping it all at the same time, like a big heap, like here, have it all. But that the rest of the world we live in, and I think people want to watch when they want to watch it. I think if you've already aired it, then you've got to your midseason finale. Yeah, absolutely. Get that stuff
put
up
on Netflix or Amazon or something like that.
Yeah. Get it up there. You have to, I think now it's like, we talked a little bit about this before and there's a deeper column. There's a deeper discussion to be had about this. We have talked about it in the past, though, the idea that because there's so much competition, if you go off the air, you're lost, you're forgotten. So you need a kind of a hot stove league where you're still talking about shows after the fact, right?
Exactly. And letting people who hear about a show catch up with it so that they're back up to speed when it comes back on the air, right?
Right, exactly.
George wants to get back up to speed with S.H.I.E.L.D. and they're not going to let him.
Right. I honestly don't get the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. protect. I mean, I have a feeling that ABC/Marvel think that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is much more popular than it really is.
The Flash beats it, right?
They've seen the ratings, so they know that it's not popular, and it's probably not going to grow from where it is. Once you're this far into it, you're not going to get a whole lot of new people, but you're certainly not going to do it if you don't give newbies access to stuff and make it really easy for them. So I think they're failing in that regard.
But my guess is that Agent Carter, because it's set in the past, and there may be some winks and all that, but I doubt it. I think in some ways they want to welcome in a new audience with Agent Carter. So it wouldn't surprise me in the end if this becomes just like the Marvel showcase TV showcase time slot for ABC.
I think you're right.
And they swap in other, maybe they do another run of Agent Carter and a short run of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then something else, or they drop Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and bring in some other kind of Marvel show, and it becomes, you know, Marvel Playhouse.
And that wouldn't be a bad idea. No? I just think they need to handle it better. I mean, they treated the original pilot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like we were going to see like the greatest film in the whole world. And when we finally saw it, I was like,
okay. It just was a show.
Yeah.
Some more from George. He says, side notes, as you both are looking into shows on which I recently caught up or am catching up, I thought I would offer insight. Jason, Arrow gets better as the first season develops, so let it breathe. I'm already like six six episodes into Arrow, and I can tell you this, it's easier sledding than Supernatural. So, because yeah. I tried to watch the first season of Supernatural, much tougher go. Arrow, I think they got a better idea what they're doing right from the start. So I'm enjoying mm-hmm. that. But he says it gets great by the second half of the first season. All right, I'm in on Arrow now.
Yeah, me too. I'm in on Arrow too.
Yeah. Tim, I started watching Doctor Who currently, he's George D, and currently in season 4, though it took two tries. A friend made me watch the mostly standalone episode Blink from season 3, which prompted me to push through the first 4 episodes of the first season, and I was eventually hooked. I hope that helps and or provides you fodder for quality banter. Love to your mothers, George D. P.S. Have you heard of The Riches, and is it coming back? So yeah, wow. Doctor Who, I'm with George, obviously, because I like Doctor Who, but I agree that, speaking of first seasons that you have to kind of push through, the reboot has that too. But
okay, well, yeah. That's I'm going to do it because I really would like to be.
I think you should
up.
Just watch the Peter Capaldi season that just aired. I think you should just start with that. Just start with PCAP. That's what we call him, PCAP.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sort of a completist. I'm not going to do 50 years of it, but I'm going to, you know.
Okay.
I'm going to go back to the reboot and I can
push
power
through
it. Maybe in the holidays. Although, dang, you know, not to be a broken record about like it never ends in the TV business. I mean, think about it. We just had Marco Polo drop on Netflix. And then we're having Mozart in the Jungle, which is a pilot I liked from Amazon. That series is debuting on the 23rd of December. And on the 24th starts the second season of The Wrong Mans, starring James Corden. And I really love The Wrong Mans and loved it. I mean, just very big fan of it. So the second season starts. But boy, December 23rd and 24th, can a guy take a little break?
No.
Can I get a little wind here?
No.
Ah, man. No,
you're not permitted.
Because then I go down to TCA, the Television Critics Association Winter Press Tour. And then it's just nonstop action, babe. So I don't know what to do.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, if you need a little quality alone time, Doctor Who is there for you. According
well,
to
I know
Trish D.
I know what people are saying because all my close friends say the same thing. Like, yeah, not a lot of sympathy for the TV critics. Nope.
Poor TV critics.
Poor TV critics.
I've got
the world.
I've got one more. I think one more letter for us, which is from P. Page.
Oh yes, another throwback. They're all coming back into the fold.
Exactly right. So
you know,
she says,
you break up a team. You move to a different state, then you come back and you're
back
in a different uniform. Yeah. So I don't. They're back on.
All right. It says Big Dreidel and Jason. It's one of your nicknames, one of your aliases, Big Dreidel.
Of about 100.
Yeah. Do an OG TVTM junkie a favor. In your holiday podcast, please tell the story of when Tim's drunken brother ruined Tim's Christmas when he was a lad. It's a Christmas classic right up there with A Christmas Story. Jengo and I, and probably George D, would be forever grateful. Those are our three listeners right there, along with Sherry and Larry from The Vale. I think there were about 5 TVTM original listeners. But so you got a quick version of your Christmas story where your Christmas was ruined?
I do. I have. It is sad, and it's unfortunate that Question Boy Joe Garofoli, who was the OG co-host of the original TV Talk Machine, who asked me all the questions that you're asking me now.
Read them better than Joe, though.
You
I have
do read
say.
Them better than
Sorry,
Joe.
I terrible. Love Joe. Joe has so many skills reading things off a piece of paper. Not one of them.
Not one of them. It was a disaster. But he was a great co-host. But I will
Absolutely.
Say that story is, and in fact, I may have to call him at home just to tell him as a holiday tradition, like the Grinch or Charlie Brown's Christmas. He loved that story so much because he likes cruelty and he likes ruined dreams. And if you're a listener who likes those things, I will share this with you. Christmas is my favorite holiday, always has been. And cue the violins. Came from a poor family. And we had a crappy ass fake Christmas tree that I hated. And I would put the wires in the post and get it all set up. And, you know, I'm the youngest of the family. So at some point I was the latchkey kid holding on to the dream of the great Christmas. And again, not a whole lot of money in the family. And so what my tradition to myself, cue the lonely this probably explains a lot about why I'm a TV critic, even though I didn't watch TV that much then. Cue the strings. What I would sit at night in on Christmas Eve in front of the my fake plastic Christmas tree, and I would, you know, oh, look at these five presents under the tree. Which one's mine? Blah, blah. Well, one night my drunken brother came home. I got all the lights turned out except for the lights in the Christmas tree, which is how it should be, right? That's completely Christmassy. Mm-hmm. And he opens the door, scares the crap out of me, right? Total drunken monster. He reaches for the light switch, which is behind the tree. And it's basically a little too far of a reach for him. He misses the light switch. He falls into the tree, knocks the tree completely over, and sprawling like a drunken bear on top of it is now tearing out limb after limb as he's trying to get to his feet. But at the same time, as I'm screaming in horror, he's got the boots on. And as he's trying to get up, he's tearing wrapper off of like every one of the very few presents that we had there. So it was just awful. It was just a disaster. Yeah, I was in tears. What are you, young boys, Christmas dream crushed. Oh boy.
Good times. So thanks to your friend P Page for making you relive that.
Thanks, P Page.
And we're gonna actually end this one with the same comment that we ended the last one, which is Kate from the 925, now in the 202, so from the East Bay to DC. Now that we've talked about late night, now that we've had these changes, her question is simple. Can you rank the late night shows right now? Little quick on the fly power rankings of late night.
Oh sure. Are we gonna including Letterman or post Letterman?
No, let's make it like right now.
Okay, I would do in order. I would do Kimmel. He'd been my favorite late night host, followed by Letterman because I have a tradition and I love that guy. Obviously, he's not quite on his game as he was in the past, sure. But it's been really interesting. There's my dog barking.
Nice.
So I have I go Kimmel, Letterman, then I'm gonna go Fallon.
Hmm.
And I guess then I go. And then I don't really care.
Where's Jon Stewart?
Oh well, yeah, okay. I thought you were talking about network. Well, yeah, okay. Well, if we're gonna do it that way, then I go Daily Show, and then Kimmel. I mean, because I found the Daily Show to be a little bit of a different beast. But okay, yeah. So Daily Show, Colbert, Kimmel. In that order, but if you're just going to go networks and traditional late night talk shows, I'm gonna go Kimmel as my number one, and then Letterman, and then Fallon, and then again, I just at that point I'm not, you know, I don't really care about Craig Ferguson, and you know, Seth Meyers is a nice guy, but that show has not hooked me at all. I'm not really watching that.
All right, I'm with you on Stewart number one. I was never like a long time Daily Show watcher. And yet for the last like year or so, really year and a half, really since I dipped in to see what the John Oliver guests thing was going to be like. And it converted me back. And now I'm a regular Daily Show watcher again.
Ooh,
I don't know how it happened.
Speaking of that, I would actually then have to put, yeah. Well, now as you rejigger things, you got to put Last Week Tonight with John Oliver in there. See, that's also a favorite. Wow.
Amazing. It's a good time.
Ranking. I have a feeling that we'll be talking about rankings a little more at some point.
I think so. So in our next show, which a little inside baseball for those listening to this show, our next show where we'll sound very similar to what we sound like right now. But that next show will be wearing the same clothes, but you can't see the clothes, so you won't know. We'll be a special. We're not going to post like two shows in the next 2 weeks. It's the end of the year. It's Christmas and all of that. But round about New Year's Eve, we will post episode 15, and we will be diving deep into the best of the year. Tim's got his list. You can read up now on Tim's list of the best overall shows and network shows of 2014. And then
there's a lot of them.
And then come back here round about New Year's Eve, or just, you know, push the button on your podcast app that will automatically download the thing, so you won't need to come back. It will just appear.
It'll
on New Year's Eve
in your feed.
Yes, yeah. It'll just magically appear, and then we'll talk about it then. But for now,
we're definitely going to have bubbles, right? We're going to definitely have champagne.
Yeah, and we're going to do a countdown, something like that.
Okay, good.
And so we'll plan our plan of attack for that. But for now, that is the end of this episode of the TV Talk Machine. Tim, thank you so much as always.
Jason, always happy to be here and not do very much work. Always.
And love to your mothers.
Love to your mothers.